You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right. Straight from the blistering cold of the DFW and other locations, we are getting live for Hockey Royalty here, coming in, talking all about your Kings, getting you updated with this last month of October. We got around the Pacific. How is that division looking up in our Kings of the Month? Get in the chat, like and subscribe, and you know what to do. And let's go. Welcome in, everybody. Welcome in. This is your favorite podcast, and that's why you're here. So come on in. Hit that like. Hit that subscribe button. Get in the chat. Go bonkers, because your Kings are rolling right now, and we're going to be talking all about it. But before we get into that, how are you guys doing? Joe, we'll start with you, man. You look freshly shaved up here, up top.
No.
Looking mighty fine. I appreciate you. Dressing up for the occasion.
Absolutely. It was cold today. I had to brush my car off this morning in Rochester. We didn't get like a ton of snow, but enough to where I needed to brush the car off. So that was a good start to the day. But Everton with a big win in the Carabao Cup, heading on to the quarterfinals in that prestigious tournament. So we'll see what happens in come December. So the Toffees are off. They're trying to pick some things up here after a slow start. So things are buzzing. How you doing, Russ? How you doing?
Doing pretty good. I have no idea what brushing your car off means. I don't know if I've ever experienced something like that here. But, yeah, it is getting a little brisk out here. I think I had to put a jacket on. Got down to the 60s. So is the Carabao Cup, is that like this NBA in-season tournament where it's just for fun?
So in soccer, each country, they all have these. There's multiple. Usually it's just like one domestic tournament. Like Italy has the Coppa Italia, where all the teams in Italy will play. In England, they have two. They have the FA Cup, which is in season tournament, and they have the League Cup, which is sponsored by Carabao. It's the Carabao Cup, they call it. I don't know why there's two. I don't know enough about the history to understand why there's two, the League and the FA Cup. That's a good point, Russ. So
money's fine.
But the thing is Everton they made the FA Cup semifinals in 2015 or 16. They never make a deep run in these tournaments, but they won in the round of 16 today. They drew a home game against Fulham, which is a winnable game in December in the quarterfinals. So we'll see if the Everton can make a run here and maybe come away with some hardware this tournament. We'll see what happens. So, but yes, to answer your question, it is an in-season tournament. Soccer, I don't know how these guys do it, man. Like, the season starts in August and it ends in May.
The ridiculous amount of money is how they do it.
I mean, June and July, they don't exactly have off. It's crazy.
Well, and the international stuff too that's going on with some of these players. Yeah,
some of them play international. There's no holiday.
But they play one. They play one game a week.
So Everton just played over the weekend.
If they get delayed, normally isn't La Liga and Premier one game a week, like on Saturdays?
The Premier League is the one game a week, but then you mix in these tournaments. So like Everton, or if you're in Champions League, or if you're in Europa League,
I have zero sympathy.
You're playing And it's not only that, like if you're in Champions League or Europa League, you're not only playing multiple days a week, you're in, you could be in freaking Croatia one on a Tuesday, and then you're back in England, or you're all over the, all over Europe.
I'm gonna bring in a, let's just play hypothetical and start it off with some hockey talk. Would you guys be in favor of this kind of in-season tournament that the NBA is doing for the NHL? Joe, I'll start with you. And then
I don't know enough about what the NBA is doing. If it's, I love it in soccer.
It sounds similar to like what you're describing with the soccer.
I think it's fun. I don't know. So in the NBA, so the way they do it in soccer is like, so there's the teams in the Premier League, but there's the teams in all the lower level leagues that are in it too.
The relegated like
you see it in the MLS. You see it locally.
Yeah,
in the MLS.
Like Wrexham was playing in the FA Cup, and they went to the fourth round, and they were in the fifth division down. Yeah,
exactly. So, and you see it in the United States. So, the MLS teams will play in the lower division teams in the U.S. Open Cup. Which, fun fact, Rochester back in the day, the only non-MLS team to win the U.S. Open, Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. But so it's just they, so it's leagues, it's teams throughout. So like the equivalent in hockey would be an NHL team, an AHL, like NHL, AHL, East Coast, you know, if they wanted to get crazy, maybe, I guess that's what it would pretty much be, as teams from the three leagues. So I don't know how it would work, but that would be kind of fun. So then you have teams in situ, I don't know, it would be interesting how they do
it. I think it'd be cool. But I think it'd be cool instead of like having the world championships, you know, obviously they have them every year, or the Olympics or whatever. Like maybe just have the entire NHL have a week off and just have like a little small mini tournament, like one game elimination. You just have all the people there and you play a little mini tournament there for the NHL Cup. All the proceeds go to charity and each player gets, you know, 100K or whatever that is for their participation. I think that'd be kind of cool. It'd be something to look at.
Well, the NBA, they're actually winning money for this tournament. I think that each team gets $1 million, or each player gets $1 million.
I don't know. It's a let alone watch somebody else dribble a basketball in a long time. So I have no idea what you're talking about.
The NBA one seems kind of ridiculous. It just seems more. I mean, maybe it's just because it's new. We're new to the whole thing. Like you mentioned, the soccer's in Europe, especially in England, they've been doing it for years.
And I think it makes sense in because those other leagues in Europe, like so in England and in Italy, I mentioned the Coppa Italia, like there's promotion relegation.
Yeah.
So there's just it's a pyramid structure, whereas you can kind of play, so you can have teams from two or three leagues down. You can play a team in the early round of the tournament, play one of the teams in the Premier League, and the Premier League team may rest some guys because it's like, wow, we're playing a lower division team, and maybe that's a big win for the lower division team. They make some money, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
I just don't know how much it works if you're just playing the same teams. Like in the NBA, if that's all it's doing, I don't know.
That's the thing.
There's no
like, it'd be cool. I would love to see like relegation in like certain aspects of the four sports. Like if there was enough teams, like it'd be hard to do with only 32 teams.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, across pretty much every four major sport. But if you
there's just not enough. There, like, England is the exactly. only, soccer is the only sport in England. Soccer and rugby, yeah. Right? Like,
if you did a tournament like that, I remember they talked about this a few years ago where they wanted to have their own Champions League. And mm-hmm. I don't know if it was more mm-hmm. like an exhibition, but for hockey, where you get like the league winners from the NHL, league winners from like the Swedish league, the Finnish league, like all those other fun. Which would have been pretty cool, right? I mean,
yep.
But like, it's like, at that point, like, how serious are these teams going to take it? I know Trapper mentioned, like, what about injuries, which you have to take into account? I mean, we could barely even see an Olympic participation, let alone, like, these extra tournaments that they want to talk about. So,
right.
I would love to see that. Obviously, more hockey, trying to get the best players. I mean, international, it's just a travesty, an absolute travesty that we haven't
instead of going pro, what about, like, you know, you have like tournaments with La Liga and SHL and all these other teams like sending their top guys. I think there might be something there, but
if they brought their guys,
just like my golf shot gets awry. We've gotten on a tangent here. So,
Brandon, that's why we needed you. This is what happened when you were gone.
I know. Joe and I would just go on tangents.
So we're speaking about the cold, and you know, I started the cold plunge today. I bought a cold plunge. I just started it today. So, you know, getting in that cold water was 49 degrees outside this morning. So, you know, getting that going and on a real basis, you know,
hey, so speaking of cold plunge, speaking of, have any, and I guess you guys, have you ever done the polar plunge? Are you familiar with the polar plunge?
So it's a similar thing. So I mean, obviously it's not a lake in Canada, but my tub is pretty cold. You know,
the coaching staff that we do with the hockey team, we didn't do it. We kind of, it stopped at COVID. We hadn't done it since, but every year before that, for those that don't know, it raises money for the Special Olympics. It's a huge event and it's in February in the middle of winter, and you go run into Lake Ontario in the middle of winter, and it is as cold as it sounds. And we bring hockey pucks with like our high school team's logo. And we hand them out to like, it's packed. Like people are music. It's a party. Like fans come watch it. It's crazy. And you are running in to the lake with chunks of ice in February, but it's for a great cause. It's a, when you said cold plunge, that immediately made me think of the polar.
No, plunge. I got a little tub. I woke up at seven and sat in there for 5 minutes. It's for good health. And speaking of good health, everybody here doesn't want to listen about this bunch of random stuff. They want to listen about the Kings. So let's get going.
Right.
Let's get punching in here. But before that, we got to reward our loyal listeners. Trapper said, hey, I was 5 minutes early, but last week I was 3 hours late. Is that equal? Sure. LA Kings, Road Warriors. Hey, what a rush. I love it. We got, you know, where the hell are they? We're here now. We're trying to get on, you know, 10 minute tangent. We're getting into the game. Appreciate it. Nav saying, hey, Randon already back to top form. You know, you got to stretch it out. You got to get the glutes going, get the hamstrings and the vocal cords. But, you know, after one episode, I feel like I'm good to go. Feel like back up 100% and ready to give you guys a phenomenal episode. Shankmaster coming in, say, what up, everyone? Let's get it started. Nice statement last night for the Kings. Go, Kings, go. Let's get in out here. Oh, Kings rule. Coming. Hey, guys, good to see you. Thanks. Finally see you guys live. Awesome trip so far from Zach the Kings fan. Nav come in here, say they should send the San Jose Sharks down to the AHL. With the way they're playing this year, that might be a possibility. I'll talk it up with the commissioner. We have a brunch never. So let's get into this last homestand. Obviously, we brought up the dominant trip in Toronto, or the game in Toronto, but we had two home games before that. So let's kind of break it in to closing out that homestand and what that set up for the Toronto game. Obviously, we lost in a shootout, which we never seem to win shootouts for the Kings against Vegas. We came and took care of Arizona. So between those two games, how did that kind of really shape this, your view of this upcoming road trip that we've started? Russ.
I think the back-to-back against Arizona, especially that game in Arizona, was almost like a moral victory for this team, just to be able to come back the way it started and everything like that. I thought that was good. And then the game against Vegas, it was weird. The game against Vegas, it felt like such an even game. And it's like I tweeted about it after. Like I hate when games like that have to end in a shootout. It's just the way it is in the regular season. But I guess it's like more of a litmus test for this Kings team, because you had been going up against pretty good teams to start the year. Maybe that chemistry wasn't fully there. And then you started playing well. So now the Golden Knights come in. So then it's a real test to see, okay, is this for real? At the start of the year, and it certainly seemed like it was the team really even across the board. I mean, in terms of like Corsi share, expected goal share, all that was just pretty much dead on even. Cam Talbot looked good. The goals that they scored weren't really fluky. It was just more like good plays by them. Nothing you can really hang your hat on. Same thing with the Kings. So like I said, it's just tough because you look at the standings, and if they had these two shootout wins, they would be 7-2. But you're sitting back at 5-2-2, which I guess you shouldn't be too disappointed in.
No, because Russ, because you look at it, there's a guy that came out on Twitter, and I want to acknowledge him if I remembered his name, but he said the Kings are like, what, top three in strength of schedule to start the season? So,
yeah,
you know, and they're 5-2-2. And then Dom from The Athletic, you know, follow him on Twitter. He does a lot of good analytics, whether you agree with him or not. A lot of stats that you can digest. Saying the Kings have one of the easiest schedules going forward with the way the teams are playing now. Obviously, we don't expect Edmonton to stay the same way, or Calgary, or that whatever. But it's interesting to see how we almost like withstood the beginning onslaught and came out okay. And maybe there might be brighter pastures ahead, Joe.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I thought the Vegas game was a good game. That was two good teams. And, you know, that's a game that I had no problem with games ending in ties back in the day, to be honest with you. I wouldn't have a problem if they went back to that or at least change up the point system. But I thought it was a really good game. Two good teams. I thought the Arizona game was so that what I liked about that game is the Kings demonstrated they weren't fazed by getting down early, and they just like, listen, we're a better hockey team. Go win the game. Go dominate the game. Get back into it, and they did. I mean, they were down early, 3-1, 4-1, and they totally dominated the hockey game. The first period they dominated despite being down a couple goals. The second period they just controlled the rest of the game, and slowly over the course of the game were able to find enough goals to complete the comeback. But that was great to see, because it's just as if they weren't even like, it was like a gnat just bugging them. It's like, okay, we're done with you guys, let's just get through this. And it was a workmanlike comeback. It was impressive. And then the Golden Knights game, like I said, it was an even game. It's Vegas is, you know, off to a really good start this year. They've won three shootouts, if I'm not mistaken. But hey, you got to win them, and they did. So I think the Kings are off to a pretty good start this year.
I thought tidbit about the players one being the ones to kind of turn it around in that intermission after being down 4-1 to Arizona. I thought that was really cool. That's great to hear. You want to hear players that are bought in where, I mean, yeah, you want to have your coach kind of rile the guys up, but if the players are the ones that are riling themselves up, that's even better, because then that means they're bought in. They know what's at stake this season, right? They know that this is pretty much a Stanley Cup contending team. And especially a player like Drew Doughty who sees that. So that was cool to see.
And here's the thing. Like, it's early in the season. The Kings have been down 3 goals on a few different occasions early in the season. Like, I don't know if, you know, what the coach's message was in those intermissions earlier, like against Colorado, against Carolina, and these other games. But that – you can't be doing too many of those less than 10 games in if you're the coach. Like, that's going to get stale quickly.
But Joe, we talked about it in the last podcast. We don't think the Kings are ever out of a game. And then right after we released that podcast, they came back from 4-1. We looked atrocious.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yes and no. Like, against Arizona, you're saying?
Well, yeah, we looked atrocious against Arizona. But then even then, you look at not that we were out of a game, but we're going to talk about it later. Right, Wolf was one of the best goalies in the league, 9.68 save percentage, and we just dumped on him in the first. Like, this Kings offense knows no boundaries right now.
And I think that's, you know, that's where, to Russ's point, the players, I think, have gained this confidence. They're like, okay, we know that as a group. Like, so 2 goals, 3 goals after a period, that's not enough to phase them. So, and I think that's the great thing about this team. And you look at the guys that are scoring. Like, look at the Arizona game. It was – they had goals from Mikey – two goals from defenseman Mikey – or 3 goals from defense, because Doughty scored 2 that game. Mikey Anderson, Drew Doughty pitched in a couple. And then you look at the Vegas game, and it's Laferriere scores. It's Trevor Lewis scores, right? Doughty adds another one. So they're getting scoring from up and down the lineup. They're getting contributions from the back end, which I know you guys know, and especially Russ – you know, we talked about this last couple of weeks when Randon was out, was offense from the blue line. You know, Doughty was one of my X-factors. I think Gavrikov was yours. And, like, getting that production from the blue line. So they're getting that. So right now, everybody's chipping in, it seems. So it's a really, like I said, it's a really good, deep start to the season, I'd say.
That quote from Doughty after the Arizona game where he said, I've been with this organization for all these years. And this is probably – I think he said something about, like, it feels like they could score at will.
Yeah.
It's the first time it feels like they could score at will, which, I mean, that's what it seems like, right? I can't remember an offense this good for the Kings. And no, I think the goals pretty much say it, right? They haven't scored this many goals in the first 9 games since, like, 95.
So. Yeah, for since the mid-90s, it has been a team that has had excellent goaltending and horrid – offense, horrid shooting percentages. It's just done a complete 180. You know, really, it started last season. And this year is no different. The save percentage is not great. Everything else offensively is outstanding. And that's,
I think the number one thing to that is it's not the power play. Starting last season, the power play was so red hot. Everybody was like, hey, we're scoring a lot of goals. Power play is scoring at will. This is 5-on-5.
Yeah.
This isn't seasonal. This isn't a fluctuating thing. Like, this team is rolling 5-on-5 consistently, which is where you play most of your hockey. You know, like, I feel like I was excited last season, but you knew the goals had to come on the power play to start the season. And now I'm like, dude, like, let's just forget the penalty. Let's keep going. Let's play 5-on-5 here. Cause I mean, not that the power play has been bad, but it's just like, I feel more confident with the way we're rolling all four lines. And I understand that you're not going to have the third and fourth line playing consistently, or I guess there's really not a third line because the middle two kind of swap, but the fourth line playing as red hot as they are now. But I think as Zach, the Kingdom or Kings fan comes in here saying our PK has improved. So we're stopping scoring on a high level and then we're playing good 5-on-5. So when we get that good PK shift, we're able to move back and we're able to restore the momentum in our favor pretty quickly because all four lines have really high Corsi right now. And I just think that it's a really interesting team because we're doing that counterpunch thing that we talked about last episode, yet we're locking down on the PK and we're able to reestablish momentum. I think those are all the three things that you want. And maybe the power play isn't as relevant as people think. Obviously we want to be better than middle of the pack, but to be able to stop when we need to and counterpunch, I think it's an interesting dynamic to what the team has playing this last month, especially last week.
Just real quick, I appreciate Bruce T giving us the update on the Calgary score. Seems like the Flames are down 4-2 to the Dallas Stars. So I appreciate that, Bruce T. You know I love nothing more than to see Joe's
Flames. They're competing. They're competing for relegation with the Sharks.
I could go on a whole long-winded. We probably go on a whole long-winded thing about the Flames because it's just so funny to me, at least. I guess I feel bad for people up in Calgary, but it is what it is. But back to the Kings. Just, I mean, to talk on like what you're saying, Randon. Everything's you're so right because I love that the team. Like, if the power play is struggling, that's like it is what it is. But if you have a good penalty kill to go along with that 5-on-5 scoring, the power play is pretty much just a cherry on top at this point. I mean, last year, the team was pretty good 5-on-5, but they were really good during the power play, but the penalty kill was terrible. So that's why there were certain points when the penalty kill would just be like, just give up a really like bad goal in a bad situation of the game. But now, if you can have a penalty kill that's just holding its own, holding forward and not giving up that goal, like especially what we saw in last night's game, there were chances for the Maple Leafs. They got their probably opportunities, but the Kings penalty kill shut it down and stopped that momentum, especially for a vaunted power play like them. So if that continues, that's huge. I mean, I could care less about how the power play does. I'm sure maybe I don't want to see it do too bad, but I'm so happy that the penalty kill has gone up to this next level and seems to be back at a level we want to see it at.
You know, I haven't like studied this and watched, gone back and watched like every penalty kill or anything like that. But you look last year, the penalty kill, when you look at like the expected goals against, was top like 5 in the league. It's just they had a league worst save percentage on the penalty kill. And this year so far, the expected goals against is kind of similar. It's top 10, like 7th or 8th or something like that. The difference is they're also getting top 10 goaltending on the penalty kill. So I'm not going to say it's the same in terms of structure or anything like that, because I know there's been some personnel changes, but just from a, like I said, I haven't studied it or anything like that, but from like expected goals standpoint, it's not much different. It's just, you're getting a couple extra saves and it's fascinating. It's holding 92 points out. Talbot been making some big saves in the PK. Like the old adage is your goalie is your best penalty killer. And yes and no, I guess what he really can be is your worst penalty killer, because you saw last year the Kings, at least from an expected goals and high danger chances against on the penalty kill, were not as bad as a bottom 10 team, but they were a bottom 10 team because they couldn't get a save on the kill. And this year, early on, their expected goals against is pretty similar. It's just they're getting more saves. So I don't want to lazily say that, well, they're just getting more saves, so that's it. The kill hasn't actually improved, because maybe it has. But it's just interesting to see when you look at the numbers that it's fascinating when you go from an 820 save percentage to a near 900 save percentage, what can happen to your penalty kill.
That would be an interesting thing to research is, I guess maybe they should change the adage to your goalie is your most important penalty killer. He's the only one on the ice for the entire power play, right? Mm-hmm. So that'd be interesting to look at to see what goalies do well. I'm going to look that up after this. But I'm curious.
Well, while they're looking that up, let's get to our new sponsor, Raycon here. Code THPN here at raycon.com/THPN. Man, the holidays have been hectic. I know that everybody's going out there getting in their holiday season here for Halloween. All candy highs and everything like that, but it may be too early to start decorating for Christmas here. But it's never too early to start holiday shopping. Why not take care of it right now? Before all the crowds get in and pack the calendars, making shopping a total nightmare, especially when you can get some of the best deals of the season before Black Friday, before all the November sales. You can shop Raycon products here right now and save up to 50% off because they're early Black Friday special going on right now. You guys haven't heard me talk about Raycon, but I am a fan. Their earbuds coming in here, which I'm not wearing right now because this doesn't plug in my computer, but I wear them to the gym all the time. Great volume, great fit. You can get sweat in your ears and they stay in. Everybody was trying to get that gym fit coming in here. Talk about Raycon's buds. First made their names for themselves with their audio space, with their products like Everyday Earbuds, known for delivering high quality and thoughtful features like 32-hour battery life and perfect ear fit all day for your lasting comfort. Everybody is on the go. In this past year, they've expanded their entire business with the introduction of Raycon Home and PowerTech, which I want to get into and release into my apartment. Their 5-star reviewed Magic 180 cable allows you to charge iOS, micro USB, Type-C devices 8 times faster with 100-watt power delivery. Everybody needs to get on the go and get that juice when they can. Their faucet filter, Ultra filters water on your tap. Man, they're going in your ears. They're going in your water. Man, they're all about the heavy metals, taking that out and putting it in your life, in your earbuds. Must have ensuring your water to wash your face, brush your teeth, and actually know that it's clean. Raycon is known for delivering high quality and thoughtful features at half the price of other premium tech brands. No wonder their products have racked up tens of thousands of 5-star reviews. To get everybody in the holiday spirit shopping a bit early, Raycon is currently offering 20% off their site with select products offering half off. That's right, half off select products. So beat the crowds now. Trust me, you do not want to miss out on Raycon's early Black Friday sale. Hurry now, buy Raycon at raycon.com/THPN for 20 to 50% off. That's raycon.com/THPN to score 50% off select Raycon products. Buy Raycon now. So let's get into, you know, what we call the invasion of Toronto, or the invasion of Canada, because that's where we're coming from, boys. Domination.
Can I hate to do that. I know I always interrupt you, Randon.
I know. And it was not the right time for you. I was ready to get into a nice little diatribe, but because I love you, man, go ahead and chime in.
As you were going through the Raycon. So Cam Talbot this year is among goalies that have played at least 3 games is 4th in goal save above expected per 60 when on the penalty kill. Last year, among goalies that played 30 games, Cam Talbot was 5th. On the penalty kill.
Wow.
Maybe he is the penalty kill voodoo. Or he is the penalty kill, like, czar that is the answer to the penalty kill.
I looked up that same stat, and I'm on Money Puck. And they're 4-5.
Yes.
Cam Talbot is 2nd in total goals saved above expected, only to Georgiev.
Well, I think that was Colorado.
Trying to save you money, my co-hosts here are trying to give you stats. Reindeer Head Games is saying, buds. I don't think you're talking about earbuds. I think you're talking about other buds. But either way, you're having a good time. Let's get into the domination or invasion of Toronto, where Cam Talbot, our Lord and Savior, has been coming in here hot. This was a big game. This was a huge game on the road against a dominant team, a team that everybody, including ESPN, is like, hey, they don't worry about the middle of the season. They just worry about April. But the Boo Birds, as they call them, were out in the third period here. The Kings were dominant this whole game. Really had no qualms with how the Kings played. But let's like dissect it a little bit. You know, let's pull out our scalpels and see what this game had to offer. Joe, you know, since you want to rudely interrupt me, I'm going to give you the floor this time. and what did you think about this game? Like, obviously, the highlight, I think, was this end of the second period where we just dominated for like three straight minutes. But overall, like, how did you feel like the pace of the game, the counter punches, and everything about this Kings roster in Toronto land?
I thought LA dictated the entire game. Toronto, whenever they had an opportunity, Cam Talbot was up to task. I mean, the second period, Toronto did have some opportunities. But again, Talbot was solid. They had a few more high danger chances than they did in the first. And again, he was really good. You mentioned that end of the second period, it was the Philippe Deneau line that was out there too for ever just dominating the puck. And I think they actually had a change and Kopitar's line was out there too. The Deneau line played just over 12 minutes together, 19-8 edge in shot attempts, 8-3 in scoring chances, expected goals of nearly 56%. Just a dominant showing from that line. And really the other lines played pretty well too. I think Dubois was slightly under 50% in possession numbers, but overall, I mean, this was a performance that was just, the Leafs didn't look like they didn't want any part of the way the Kings were playing, because the Kings, they were dominating in zone, they were dominating shifts. And then the Kings, as we know, play that 1-3-1 to the neutral zone, and the Leafs just, they just didn't have the jump to get through it yesterday. And it was a dominant performance against a team. Like, I know they're coming off a road trip, Toronto is, and sometimes that first game back off a road trip can be a little lax, but
no, still, they're coming off a road trip. I heard that like 10 times.
Yeah, I know.
Podcast is crazy.
I still thought it'd be
teams all come off of road trips. Like I understand it's the East Coast and the Canadian bias. Like, oh, they had too much poutine. Well, they eat that every day. But Joe, like, you're talking about the dominance here.
Yeah.
You're talking about the dominance. And I want to kind of funnel your energy here.
Thank you.
What about the way that Kings played made it so successful with how Toronto's constructed? Because Toronto's constructed with firepower. And we seem to negate that quite a bit. And they brought in Ryan Reeves to give a little bit more physicality, but they didn't seem to play more physical in the key moments against the Kings. So was it the 1-3-1? Was it the counterpunching? Was it just overall dominance for the LA? How did you feel like the Kings beat Toronto?
Well, I mean, the 1-3-1 was helpful in the sense that, again, it seemed like Toronto lacked a little bit of jump. They lacked a little bit of pep in their step, if you will. And they just couldn't figure out the 1-3-1 yet. They couldn't cleanly get into the LA zone. So that made life very easy on the Kings in the sense that they weren't really having to sit in their entire zone and defend. Again, there were periods in the second period where that happened, but for the most part they were able to kind of get up and out relatively easily. And again, when you look at how that Deneau line consistently, they the way they play on a cycle, Byfield looked great on the ice yesterday. That line, the Kopitar, Byfield, Kempe line was moving. Blake Lizotte line is always going to be kind of just water bugs out there, so it was created a lot of problems for Toronto. Their back end was, I felt like, under pressure quite a bit. And this is an example of the depth of the Kings roster, because yes, Austin Matthews and William Nylander and John Tavares, Mitch Marner, they're going to match up against anybody. But man, the deeper you go in that lineup, and it's just like, you still got to deal with, you know, Dubois or Deneau, however the teams decide to switch. And then again, I'm so glad I tweeted yesterday about Ray Ferraro when he made it a point to talk about the depth of the Kings centers. And he mentioned all four. It's not just the three, but Blake Lizotte also. And that's the thing, is you look at the Blake Lizotte line and there's no relief there, right? That line controls their shifts. So it's just the Kings, they came at Toronto in waves. And whether it was tired from a road trip, whether it was it's the quietest building in hockey, Toronto couldn't get up for this one. And if you can't get up for a game against the Kings, they're going to do
consult your doctor.
They're going to do exactly that. They're going to swarm you, and there's just no answer for it. And they didn't. So
Yeah, Russ, I mean, how do you want to add to that? You were checking your phone, obviously, maybe probably for the World Series, which Texas is up 1-0 on the bottom of the eighth, if anybody cares about the World Series. But Russ, you want to piggyback off that? You want to take a different angle?
Yeah, I mean, like Joe said, the depth. I looked up, so out of the 20 skaters the Kings have iced so far this season, 16 of them have scored a goal, which is insane numbers. I think only Vegas has more, and they have 18.
You want to repeat that for everybody?
Yeah, the Kings have 16 skaters with a goal, and that's second in the NHL in terms of depth scoring. So, yeah, and I mean, you just match up, like Joe said, with the talk with Ferraro mentioning the Lazat line. I mean, look at the Kings. I mean, we probably obviously know more about our fourth line in terms of Blake Lazat's contributions, Carl Grundstrom, and Trevor Lewis. But just compare that to what the fourth line for Toronto. It's like Ryan Reeves, Noah Gregor, and Holmberg. Those guys have no points. They couldn't – like, look at Ryan Reeves tried to play defense. The guy was totally lost in his own zone, which is hilarious that they gave him a three-year deal, by the way. And the thing with – I have no clue why John Klingberg got $4 million. Like, watching him play defense was hilarious, by the way. Like, that Brad Treveling is just ruining another franchise. I don't know how he got that GM job. But anyway, like Joe mentioned, like, it seemed like the Maple Leafs just wanted no part of the 1-3-1 for the Kings. And if you think about it, like, I wonder if there are a lot of skill guys on that Maple Leafs team. Maybe they're not really so keen on that dump and chase, which is the one
frustrating
forces you to do, right? If you're going to try to carry into the zone, Vladislav Gavrikov's stick is going to be right there waiting for you, or Mikey Anderson, somebody. So I have to go back and kind of look at some how many like times the Maple Leafs actually decided to dump the puck in and make the defenseman of the Kings just chase the puck behind their net. It didn't seem like it happened that often. But to go and also
is it me or is Colorado the only team that really has like dominated our 1-3-1? Like it seems like Nathan MacKinnon just attacks the forward on that.
Edmonton does okay with it.
Edmonton, yeah. Edmonton. Well, they're used to it by now playing against it. It seemed like I remember Woodcroft in one of those playoff games. He had his hand out telling them to wait, and they would literally just generate speed, dump the puck in, and the guy who that F1 had so much speed that the defender couldn't even race him back to the end wall. And it seemed like the Maple Leafs just didn't want to do that and had no real strategy against the Kings 1-3-1, which. That's where you see it come into play. And if it's weird, too, if you look at the numbers, the 5-on-5 were relatively even. It was another just analytically on statistically, actually, it looked like a evenly played game, which was also was strange because if you just watch from the eye test, it just seems like the Kings dominated. Weren't a lot of chances, but in terms of puck possession, the Kings just constantly had the puck. So
it seemed like a traditional Kings game in the opposite sense, right? Like us Kings fans. We usually outshoot everybody. We usually out-hit everybody. We usually outshoot, you know, it's like, but that was all Toronto. And then yet we were up, you know, we're up in the game. Like it felt like we were putting on somebody else's shoes for one night.
LA had 60% possession, 60% scoring chances. I mean, it wasn't, I mean, it was what, 52 to 30 something.
You look at the base stats though, I'm talking about Joe, like the shots were in Toronto's favor. The basic stats. If you were to take a blanket, just snapshot of the game,
I think high danger was even at 5-on-5 too.
It was.
So,
but I don't know.
I think it's a statement game because it looked like we were more efficient for once.
No
like,
question.
We normally were very like a shot heavy team. Like, hey, let's just throw pucks to the net in unopportune moments. And now we're being much more selective. We're being much more dominant, which happens with the depth down the spine book of the Kings organization here. I want to get into a person here that I don't think has commented to before. Jay Rowe coming in here with an amazing game last night. Love it. When I'm fearing the worst before a game, the Kings come out like that and shut everything down. Yo! Is what he's saying there. I love it. Thank you, Jay Rowe, for being a listener. Appreciate you coming in.
I want to give... shouts to Andreas Englund. Obviously, he scores his first NHL goal, but you know it wasn't only that. Like he was their best player on the roster in terms of expected goal share, 78% at 5-on-5. He actually really, really held his. He did more than hold his own yesterday. So, really good game for him, probably his best game of the season, which was really good to see on the road in Toronto. Like you said, Brandon, this is a statement game. It's a big game in Toronto. national, you know, or ESPN game on that
night. The highest publicity you'll ever receive.
Yeah, it's a big game, and they answered the bell top to bottom, really, in that lineup. But Englund, I thought, was strong. Him and Spence were strong yesterday. That was great to see. And then, of course, you had, you know, I think Byfield was the first star of the game. He played a great game, too. So Trevor Moore always seems to play well in Toronto when he goes back. So this was a top to bottom. Like I said, they came at Toronto in waves. And I just don't think Toronto had much of an answer for him possession wise.
I mean, so those last 2 minutes of that second period is just a perfect example of those waves you're talking about. Because, like we mentioned, this depth, we'll keep talking about it, is when you have the puck. I mean, if you think about it, when they started, the puck entered the Toronto zone with 2 minutes left in the second period. And it was the Andrei Kopitar line that was out there. And they had that puck in possession for like a full minute. And then you can make that change in that second period. And then out comes Phil Deneau and Trevor Moore. And it's like, you follow that Kopitar up with that line of those two juggernauts in terms of Corsi share. And you also have, we have to give some props to Arthur Kaliev too, because it seems like he's really playing, like living up. I don't want to say he's playing out of his mind, but he's definitely keeping up with some of what Deneau and Moore are doing. So I have to talk about a little bit about him. So, but yeah, that wave, as you're talking about, that's a great example in terms of what the Kings are. And they're just this wave of forwards with energy that are just coming at you left and right.
Let's do a little pit stop, you know, a little gas, you know, get some Slim Jims in here. Holden coming here, Holden 92 coming here with Englund. It definitely deserves some props. He's improved a lot since the preseason. None of us were high on him. Quick snapshot of his season so far, Joe first.
I think he's exceeded whatever expectations that I did have. I still have like uncertainties about, you know, the overall, like he's not going to score, you know, he scored yesterday, but he's not going to be anybody that contributes to points. He doesn't contribute really anything offensively in terms of shot contributions, which I guess is not necessarily his role as that kind of stable stay at home defenseman. So I guess as long as he can do that and not be somebody that is being caved into his own zone, which at least to this point has not been the case, it's okay. I'd say he's done a fine job right now as LD3, and I think they take it.
Russ, what do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree with what Joe said. It seems like he's getting more comfortable as the season's gone on. And you could say the same thing with Jordan Spence. I think we have to talk about both of them, because Jordan Spence seems to be elevating his game these last few games as well. So,
it more still seems or less like a weird pair. Sorry, Russ.
No, yeah, it does. I mean, you want to see them get comfortable, and it's you still see those times too where they split them up, which is still interesting. I know that happened a couple times in the Toronto game, but yeah, England's look good. The thing that I mentioned this on the with Eddie Garcia on the Locked On pod, and I can't think of a moment where Andreas Englund has cost the team, which that's all you're really asking for that position, right? He's not going to play probably more than 12 minutes a night. Just go out there and don't turn it over or do anything that's going
to. So is that Mrvari? Like
that. No, I mean, I think.
No, I'm saying that isn't that what we expected out of Mrvari? So like, isn't that what we're getting now?
Yeah.
100%. To this point. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. It's a little bit more physicality too, which I guess, I mean.
And I love that he stood up for his teammate. Yeah. It was a fight. Yeah. He stood up for his teammate right away. The Kings need that. That was a good job. Let's get into here. Our next sponsor, DraftKings, has been our sponsor for a long time. Code THPN. The NFL season is going strong, and DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking up new customers with an offer that is even stronger. Just bet $5 and get any game. Just bet $5 on any game this week to score $200 in instant bets bonusly right away. The DraftKings isn't stopping there. All customers can take advantage of a sweetener offer every game in October. That's right. Just log on the app. See what sweetener is going in. See how you want to bet. I like the sweetener here this week with the NHL or the NFL. They have a lot of stuff going on with the new quarterbacks coming in. We got Heineke for Atlanta getting a little sweetener coming in. So check that out. Get on game day greatness. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Code THPN. New customers can score $200 instantly in bonus bets when you get five on the NHL. That's code THP only. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. This crown is yours. So we're going in here. Before we get into the Pacific, let's highlight some of the Kings. You know, we want to go here. The Seat Out the Round Table, first edition coming in here because we're hockey royalty. Every royalty, every night needs a seat at the round table. And so we're going to be highlighting our King of the Month at the Seat of the Round Table, giving them, you know, the blade on both shoulders, knighting them up, getting them on the round table here. I'm going to go with Russ first. Who is getting your seat at the round table here for hockey royalty?
So my player for the seat at the round table, which I love the name of this segment, by the way. I'm looking forward to this every month. But my player I picked is Drew Doughty. Drew Doughty just continues to pretty much, I don't know. Some of the things that were being said about Drew Doughty a few years ago when the team wasn't doing really well, how he was a bust, he's washed and all this stuff. It just never made sense to me because you watch a player that is so passionate, so fiery in terms of the player that he is. You just knew that that competitive drive wasn't in him when he was playing on those kind of bad Kings teams. And now we're seeing that fiery, passionate player come out to light. And it was never more evident than in that Arizona game or even in that Vegas game where he tied it late too. So tied for the NHL lead among defensemen in goals. He's the only player in the NHL who averages over 26 minutes a night game played. So he just continues to get it done. And why everybody just wants to keep writing him off and keep pointing to the contract that he's being paid, that's fine. Sure, keep doing that. He's just going to keep playing Drew Doughty type hockey, and he's playing it on both ends of the ice. He's a top three on the team in Corsi share. He's top three on the team in relative expected goal share. He's playing as the number one defenseman on a winning team, and that's really all you can ask for. So my pick was Drew Doughty.
I'm so glad that you did that. He was an extremely close second for me. I was very close to picking Drew Doughty, so I'm glad that you at least gave him the love that he deserves because he has been fantastic, and it's been a great first month for Drew Doughty, and I think the Kings needed that from the back end, and he's doing it. For me, I'm going to go with a player that's probably not going to be too surprising, but he leads the team in goals per 60. He's tied for second in primary assists per 60, leads in primary points per 60, leads in points per 60, in individual shot attempts per 60, he leads. Shots on goal, leads. Shot contributions per 60, he leads. He's on pace well above my bold prediction of 30 goals for, I think, 45. Trevor Moore gets my seat at the round table. I don't know what else he has to do. He has been in all facets of the game. He's chipped in on the power play. He's been really good at even strength, as I just rattled. Those were all 5-on-5 numbers that I just rattled off. He's had chances on the penalty kill. He's been instrumental in the penalty kill, creating chances on the penalty kill, no less. And I feel like yesterday he was getting a lot of love from the broadcast and Ray Ferraro, and it's like, good. This dude deserves it. He has been awesome to start the season. And if nothing else, it just feels like, you know, some players may be on or off in certain games. It doesn't seem like he's gotten off. He is consistent. He's involved in every play. I can't be a bigger fan of Trevor Moore than I am right now. So he gets my seat at the round table. Randon is Trevor Moore.
That's phenomenal. I mean, obviously, I'm going to be eating my crow all season. It seems like I'm going to be full on crow. I'm trying to lose weight here. Too much protein because I was a big proponent of he got paid too much. And right now he's not getting paid enough. Guy has been dominant. Sauce passing, shooting, scoring.
You weren't the only one, too. You weren't the only one.
And, you know, it's fine. You know, I think that's part of being and doing what we do is having takes and then being able to acknowledge when you're wrong. And Trevor Moore has been coming up here. I wonder how much of the concussion had an effect on the later half of his season last year. And I guess we'll never know. But yeah, I mean, he's been absolutely dominant, just some silky mitts, scoring when he can, doing the hustle plays that he normally does. I love that for you, Joe, there. Great nod. I think I'm going to go a different route here. And I think I've been very harsh on this person saying that he needs to have a big year. I think he needs to have a huge year. And that is one Quentin Byfield is getting my seat at the round table here. There was a lot of other guys that had better stats, but I think expectations were never higher for the young guy coming into the season. And so you look at his season here is 6 points in nine games. He's got 4.6 goals, 4 per 60, which is third on the Kings, 2.17 goals against per 60, which is fourth on the Kings. So he's not only playing defense, he's leading to scoring chances. Obviously, the first line hasn't been playing at a super high level, but he's still finding ways to be effective. He's using his body in opportune moments. He's not afraid to be physical on the boards. I think he's really taken this next step into maturity within his game. We haven't still seen the apex, right? I mean, a lot of people, including me, when he was drafted, thinking, you know, 85, 95 point score because of his size, his skill, effectiveness. But I was on record. I wanted 60 points from him this season. I really was trying to push that goalpost out as far as I possibly could. He's on pace for 55, right? So right there within reach, he's only going to get stronger. And then like that first line hasn't really jumped off the table on 5-on-5 like the rest of the team has. But I just really like the way that he has carried himself, the way that he is played consistently, dealt with the scrutiny from fans, and the pressure that comes with being the number two overall pick. And not to mention, he's got the best Halloween costume on the team. with the Incredibles there. So I really like the Byfield first month, and I really want to see where this apex goes for him this season, because if it goes up from here, you're looking at, obviously, Kempe is not on pace for 40 goals, but he's still on pace for a high amount of points. Kopitar is on pace for over a point per game. If Byfield's game continues to grow, could we see a total of maybe 300 points between that first line? Probably not. Could we see a 200 points between the first line? Probably. So I think that that's where you're looking at, where the Kings have been a team that is, we'll beat you with waves, we'll beat you with defense, but we've never really had a first line that just like, hey, let's just dominate the other opponents. If Byfield takes that next step, which it looks like he's starting to, we might be able to see that with the LA Kings.
Yeah, I think that's a great pick. It feels like the Kings aren't really like they're not top heavy. They just have three really solid, like all three of those lines could be number one lines on some of the other teams. Definitely the Sharks, that's for sure. But they're really solid trios just up and down the lineup. And even the fourth line, you have to give them some credit too. But yeah, I love the pick with Byfield. I mean, his play, that play off the wall. I mean, yeah, it was against John Klingberg, who didn't want to play defense there. But still, just to take it off the wall, curl to the middle, and just throw it on net. Because that's kind of what I've been critical of Quentin Byfield of these first couple of games. Especially there was one play I mentioned when that video I posted the other day in that game against Arizona, where it just seemed like he had a one-on-one chance for the goaltender. And he just didn't want to take the chance or throw it on net. I'd like to see him be a little bit more PL Dubois-y type there and just use that big frame of yours and drive the net. But some of the things and plays he's been doing, that speed through the neutral zone has been so evident every game. So, I mean, for Quentin Byfield to, like you mentioned, the expectations that were at or there for him this year coming into the season, it seems like they're not really getting to him at all, and he's just hitting it at strides. So, good start to the season for him.
Yeah, he's been a player, you know, kind of dating back to last season, especially when he made the switch to the wing, where he was involved in every play. There was times where he was driving play, but he hadn't yet shown the ability to actually make plays, if that makes sense. It's because, like, he skates a million miles an hour, obviously. That's he's one of the fastest skaters in the league. He skates with a powerful stride. So he's winning battles. He's doing a really good job in puck protection. And I think what has to happen as he plays more games, and we talk about the game slowing down for guys, right? That's something that we've talked about a lot on this show. There's kind of three things that go along with this. It's obviously his feet are he's really fast, which as I've said before, fast skater doesn't necessarily make you a good skater. So what he's got to just get more in the habit of now, and we're seeing examples of it, and the Toronto game was a perfect one of when to turn those jets on, but also when to bring them back. You don't need to go full throttle all the time, but when do you have to just kind of be idle, and when can you kind of pick and choose your times to do that? So when his feet, his hands, and his brain are all kind of, when they all come together, that's when you have a dominant player. That's way easier said than done. I think Jay Fresh has put out like some of the charts from the NHL Edge data, and you know, some of the fastest guys in the league. And I think today was some of the slower guys in the league. And you saw some of the guys on that list were some of the most dominant players in the league, Anze Kopitar being one of them, because it's not always about being fast. You know, if you are smart and you can think fast, you're going to be fine. So if Byfield is able to, and that part of that comes with experience. I mean, some guys just have that kind of innate in them and the way they play, and just it's their style to be a little bit more that style, where Byfield is much more of a go, go, go anyways. If and when he starts to kind of, it slows down just a little bit for him to where he can understand when to turn it up, when to throttle it back, and then also use his hands and his brains all at the same, like once that happens, it's a dominant player there. Again, that's difficult to do. That's what makes the elite players the elite, but you see the tools in the box. So it's just a matter of them all coming together, but we're certainly seeing those signs that we were really looking for, because he's taken that next step, like I said earlier, about actually being able to make plays where he hadn't shown that ability in the prior years.
I mean, Russell's over there is going Charlie from Always Sunny with all the chalkboards, because he's thinking about Kachev just slowing the pace down. Oh, saucing. Man. He's still never going to be over that.
Let me talk about getting Crow.
Yeah.
You mentioned Randon, and I'm glad you did, because I was going to bring it up. So he's on pace right now for 55 points. Is that good? Like I mean, I like it. You know, especially coming
for me, I wanted 60. And I think there's a way to move forward there, because obviously a little bit of snake bitten. He had a couple shots that were wide open that he went a little bit over the bar. I think the first line has not been playing well. So I've been liking it. Would I be disappointed with 55? No, but I'm not gonna back down. It's been 1 month in. Yeah. If I were to back down from my expectations of him, that would be uncouth of me.
I think there's another step that the first line can take, right? I think that's what we're expecting, is that there's still more. It's funny because we're talking about a team that leads the NHL in offense, but that first line just hasn't gotten going, it feels like. I mean, you could say that about the PL Dubois line with Kevin Fiala, who just kind of seems like he's so weird, but it seems like he's struggling, even though he leads the team in points. But that's typical Kevin Fiala. But yeah, I agree with you, Randy, where like there seems like there's room for even more to see. But I'm glad that Kings fans and us, I guess, too, are tempering expectations. We're not out there asking for like 80 points or anything like that. This is a great first step. If he can get between 50 to 55 points or even 60 points, I think that's a really solid next marker for
PL Dubois. Just made $8 million off of getting 60 points. So like that's
100%. I think you want to see that level of progression. And what did he have last year? 20s? What did he end up with points wise?
In terms of production.
It wasn't enough.
Whatever, it wasn't enough.
So you want to start to see that production. So even if he hits 50, you're talking about somebody that's doubled his point production. So at least you're like, okay, now we're seeing some progress that matches up, because he had the under the hood stuff, right? He had the strong play. The analytics were good last year, but there was something missing in his game where he just wasn't. Again, it seemed like he was involved in the play, but he wasn't making plays. This year, we're seeing him make plays. I think that's the step that he's taken. And again, there's still another step or two to turn him into that like high end, legit first line player, or elite even first line player. He's not there, but he's definitely showing a progression.
Which is his shot, in my opinion. Like if he can start sinking, like if he can start making some of those plays and sink that shot from 15 feet out, 20 feet out, when he's one-on-one with the goalie, that would be the next step for me, because he's not sinking those.
Right, so I haven't looked at the – and that's something I haven't looked at the NHL edge yet. And like I said, I don't care so much about how hard he shoots, but it definitely looks like his release is something that is not as good as some of the other. Look at Trevor Moore.
He shoots high every single time.
Yeah, well, I think we see a lot of that. A lot of that in the league these days. We see more up than we see down in terms of just the way the goalies play. I think the shooters have adjusted. But you're right though, Randy. Like that's what it's going to be. Is part of that next step is what does he evolve into? Is he going to be a shooter? And especially if he stays on the wing, right? Right. I mean, is he?
But I would counteract that, Joe, with saying like we've seen his line mate, Kempe, like develop into that where he's taking the puck, mm-hmm. he's beating people at the blue line, he's one-on-one with the goal, he snipes that no matter what side of the ice he's on, and that's why he's scoring 40 goals. And I'm not saying that Kempe or not saying that Byfield needs to score 40 goals. I'm saying that's the part of his game that he's missing. He's right now he's beating people one-on-one, but he's not finishing. He's deferring or he's making a bad shot or whatever. Like, if you can get 10, 15 one-on-one goals, which he can with his feet, but he can't with his hands right now. So, like, if you can get those types of one-on-one opportunities or where he's making a goal from a bad angle, like, that, the sky's the limit for Byfield at that point. Because everybody, including me, thought he was 81, 82 points or above when he got drafted because that's what we were told. So now, like, where is that disconnect? And I think the disconnect – for his game is going to be his shot. Like he was beating OHL goalies that don't have any business in the NHL because he's better than them at every level. Now he's facing NHL goalies and he needs to have that kind of shot and he needs to make that shot with less time to decide that he's making that shot. And that just comes with time. And it looks like he's doing that. I just think his shot's the next step. And I said shot a lot, but I think that's,
I don't disagree. I mean, and in LA, you've seen what Kempe did, how much better his release has gotten. Look at Trevor Moore, his release this season, some of the goals he scored early on here. So yeah, I mean, I think that is, and again, remember he's 21 years old and still growing into this frame that he's got. So he's not a finished product physically. So we're probably a good year or two years away from seeing what he kind of settles into and starts to play at more consistently from a weight standpoint. So, yeah, I think.
Well, Joe, I'm 6'5 and I'm 36. I'm still growing into my weight, if you know what I mean.
So, I think we'll see what position he stays. Is he going to stay on the wing or is he going to be somebody that eventually gets back down the middle? Would that remains to be seen, but I certainly wouldn't touch or mess with anything that's being successful. And right now he is doing a really nice job on the wing. So I certainly don't touch that.
I want to take a break here and talk about the baseball. Texas comes back to win in game 5 and they win the World Series, first World Series for the Texas Rangers. Okay. I won't wish you congratulations because I don't like you as a team, but everybody else can. And so there we go. Now, I really don't have much of a baseball fandom anymore, obviously, with the Oakland A's. So let's get into around the Pacific because I know this topic might take us way in a lot of tangents. So we're already over an hour. But before that, let's get into one. Nav said the captain is his seat at the round
table. Fair enough. Still doing it.
And there's a lot Shake of choices, right?
And Shake Master saying, everyone, hit that like button now. Show these guys some love. Appreciate that. Hey, yeah, get us out to different stratospheres. I put in the bit to get Maple Leafs fans in here. I wanted to see them coming in and complain because that's all they're good for. So let's get into the next topic here, which is around the Pacific. So right now, in case anybody doesn't know, the Kings are third in the Pacific behind the Golden Knights and the Vancouver Canucks. Who would have thought that? Golden Knights are 9-0-1. Their only non-win was against the Kings. Shrug that shoulder off here. Vancouver next 6-2-1.
Only lost for them is Chicago.
Chicago. Sorry. Yeah, they beat us in overtime.
It was a tie game.
Kings are 5-2-2. Ducks 5-4. Kraken 3-5-2. And all the rest of the teams that you know and love are in the bottom. So I posted this on Twitter. And obviously this is not fast and true here, but the ESPN broadcast said, you know, American Thanksgiving is a big key to where like teams will figure out. And then they said the stats aren't too dissimilar for November 1st, only a couple percentage points off. which is right around that 60 to 65% mark. So where you're seeing the standings now, often 60 to 65% of the time, they finish that way, or those teams finish within the playoff margin. Obviously, a lot of teams in there that weren't expected to be in there. You have the Vegas Knights and the Kings that were expected to be in there. Where do you guys see the Pacific right now? And let's start with the standings here. Who's your most highest surprise team, Joe, with the Pacific?
It can go a couple of different ways. So there's surprises, disappointments, but I'd say it's Vancouver. I wasn't all that in on them, but I'm in on and always have been in on Thatcher Demko, and I think he's playing really well to start the season. They're getting some good production. Elias Pettersson's off to a good start, so they're playing. I give them credit. Quinn Hughes is off to a good start. They're off. I would say overall they're a surprise, because I just was not that high on this team, not that high on the back end. I still don't know that I'm a buyer in them, but you have to be happy with your start if you're a Vancouver Canucks fan.
I agree. That would be my pick for the surprise. I mean, the thing with the Canucks is no one really picks them, because it's always like, it's always the Canucks, right? It's like, what have you done for me lately? So going into the season, I didn't really have them as a playoff team, but I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised if they make the playoffs. I still won't. I mean, like Joe mentioned, you have Thatcher Demko, one of the better goaltenders in the NHL, within a league where there aren't that many good goaltenders or great goaltenders. And then it seems like Elias Pettersson's kind of turning it on to that. He's taking that next step in his development, where now he's looking to be an MVP-type caliber player. Quinn Hughes is looking really good. It seems like Rick Tocchet has that team playing really well. It was pretty interesting. He benched JT Miller in the game last night against Nashville, and they still ended up winning. So when you have those moments and you have that team or that coach who's willing to be hard-headed with his team, I think that does a lot of good things, and maybe the Calgary Flames can learn something from that too.
Speaking of the Hughes family, I just saw a stat today that Jack Hughes leads the league in points, Quinn Hughes leads defensemen in points, and Luke Hughes leads rookies defensemen in points.
Wow. That's
pretty good.
Talk about a quality family, a
talented
there.
Talented family.
I think my surprise or whatever of the Pacific is got to be the Alberta, right? I mean, everybody thought that at least the Flames were going to be decent, and they've been atrocious. And their own defenseman came out and said, hey, I apologize to fans who have bought tickets. We have been god-awful. And kudos to him. That was the best interview I've seen all year. He's like, man, we've been bad. I know we've been bad. I apologize to the fans. I don't know what's going on. We're going to try to fix it. And then Edmonton has been a dumpster fire this season so far. Got it, obviously, back on track in the Battle of Alberta against another really bad team. But there's been talks in the national media about trading Connor McDavid. Like, he wants out over 1 month in this new season. So it in Canada media, like, it is on fire there. Like, people are just lighting everything ablaze. And I think that's just been crazy, because Calgary was such a dominant team 5-on-5 for the last few years. Joe has lost a lot of money on them, and people have had headaches about the Flames. But, I mean, Edmonton has beat us twice. They were close to a Stanley Cup. They have the best player in the game. They have two top five players in the game, power play merchant in Leon Draisaitl. But like, they're always around. Like, even in the regular season, they're still scoring and stuff like that. And for them to be as bad they were in October is kind of puzzling for me. That's where I'm at. It's not the positive with Vancouver or maybe the Ducks, because, you know, Joe and I expected the Ducks to get more points, because we said that on multiple occasions. But
just wait.
It is the downfall of the heavy hitters there. And like the stat is, 60% of what we're seeing here, what I just rambled off, will be true come playoff time. Where is that 60%? Will teams fall? Will teams rise? Who knows? But I think it's just interesting to talk about.
Yeah. So real quick on Vancouver, I don't know. They're third They're one of the bottom five teams in expected goal share. Like I still think. I mean, then again, if Thatcher Demko is going to stay healthy, he's going to steal them some games. So you know they could hang around and be difficult. But you know, to Alberta, you look at these are two of probably the two of the most. If you're a believer in PDO in terms of luck, quote, it's a shorthand for luck, the shooting percentage plus save percentage. Calgary is the unluckiest team in the league, the lowest five on five. Shooting percentage and the lowest 5-on-5 save percentage.
Will you stop convincing our fans why you're losing so much money?
Well, the other thing with Edmonton, like Edmonton, they're shooting at 7%. They lead the league in high danger chances share. They lead the league in expected goal. Well, they're second to Dallas in expected goal share. Like it ain't all that bad in Edmonton. They're not getting saves right now. But goalies are goalies, so I'm not like I think that they'll get enough saves as the season goes along that they're gonna be okay. Calgary, I'm worried about just because this isn't a new trend. It's been this way. Like they have unsustainable bad shooting percentage and they have an unsustainable bad save percentage that continues to be sustained. So they somehow pull this off and they buck the trends despite playing maybe not this year so much, but they've been a good team, like objectively the last couple of years, just, you know, puck luck wise, it's been bad. And so I don't know. I don't know what to make of Calgary. I'm definitely.
Well, Holden will help you out. Calgary just sucks.
I disagree, Holden. I will say though, I'm not feeling good about my over 94 points with Calgary right now.
I kind of agree with Joe in terms with Edmonton, because I feel like they're going to figure it out. I mean, McDavid was out like a couple games. It just seemed like they had a slow start. Yeah. I mean, it always feels like they did it, I believe, last season, where they just had a ridiculous end to the season, I believe, when they got Ekholm. But I mean, if they could stop playing Darnell Nurse so many minutes, well, maybe they'll help them out.
Can I say something else too, Russ? Like, and the other thing to remember, so they're 2-5-1, right? And Vancouver is 6-2-1. So they're taking a couple of the surprises here, right? Our surprises and Randon's. The only reason that this is even a discussion is because it's the first 8-9 games of the season. At any point in any season, Vancouver will go on a 6-2-1 run over the course of 82 games. Edmonton will go on a 2-5-1 skid over the course of 82 games. It doesn't get talked about much when it happens in like January, but it's the first 8 games of the season, so they start off. So that's all it is.
I'll counteract you here, because they talked about that on the broadcast.
Okay.
And Ray Ferraro was saying, hey, when in the locker room do you guys start realizing what your team is? And he said right around game 15. And we're not there yet. They're at game 8, so they got 7 mm-hmm. games to figure it out, which will be by American Thanksgiving, which is when the stat really hones in, right? Like they said, hey, this stat is meant for American Thanksgiving. But there's not too much disparity between November 1st and, you know, the 24th. So you're looking at the Kings have 6 games, I think, between now and Thanksgiving. So Edmonton's got to have similar, which is mean 16 to 18 points, you know, up for grabs. Like where for me, like, yeah, that's a lot of time to flip it over. Like they go 7-0 or 8-0. Yeah, they can flip it over. It is what it is. But ultimately, Ray Ferraro was saying that our identity, we knew our identity by the first month. We knew that we need to do this tweak, that tweak. Were we able to make those adjustments? We'll see if Edmonton can do that. Mm-hmm. But most of the time by American Thanksgiving, you know what your team is. You know what you got. There isn't any adjustments. Like what the, especially with Edmonton, the cap constraints, what big person are they making in to make up that jump? Yeah. And right now, I think it's, yeah, everybody thinks like, oh, you know, they can make this change because they've been there and they've done that. But McDavid can't carry them all the time, or Draisaitl can't carry them all the time. There's going to be down seasons. The best player in baseball is Mike Trout, and they've won one playoff game. Like eventually you're not going to be able to carry a team. McDavid only carries the puck for 2 minutes, total of 60 the entire game. Yeah, he's effective to a very vast degree. But is there a house of cards here in Edmonton to where they brought in a goalie and Jack Campbell paying him $5 million? They're bringing all these guys in. They lost 3 or 4 players that were depth pieces that were really effective against the Kings in the playoffs. Is there a team here that McDavid and Draisaitl can't carry to be an effective playoff team, especially if they get off to a bad start?
Well, effective playoff team, I guess that's a separate conversation. But the thing to remember, we're talking about this today on November 1st. There's more games between now and American Thanksgiving than the start of the season to today. Like there's 11 games they have before him now. Like
I haven't pulled up the schedule. So the Edmonton has 11 games before American Thanksgiving.
If I counted right. Yeah. I think in Thanksgiving is what, the 28th or 27th or something
it's
like that.
It's the third Thursday of the month, I believe. Right.
Yeah. So whatever that falls on, I think that there's 11 games that they have. So there's more than that's more games than they've played today. So yes, I buy the American Thanksgiving thing, but I'm not writing Edmonton off right now. Now, Jack Campbell was, I don't understand. One of these days GMs will figure it out, but what a horrible signing that was. And that was easily predicted.
Wasn't it the same year as Cal Peterson? Didn't
it was.
Remember him, Peterson and Grubauer all got like $5 million.
Yeah, Kemper was Kemper in that year too.
I believe so. Right.
Maybe. I think,
but yeah,
right around there.
Yeah, but I'm not ready to write Edmonton off because
I'm not saying they're a garbage team. I'm just saying like teams fall out and teams come in.
Sure.
Right. Nobody expected Seattle last year. Well, outside of Dom of the Athletic because his weird whatever. But most people don't expect certain teams. There's gonna be teams that fall, and that's why it's 60%. Right. We're talking about it here. Obviously, a lot of people can expect Edmonton to rise and come in, but sometimes teams fall short. Like, is this a possibility where Edmonton has just collapsed and they need to effectively just dissect this team?
I would say I would be more worried about that if they didn't have the best expected goal share in the league, if they didn't have one of the best scoring chances in the league, like if they didn't have one of the worst shooting percentages in the league, like they're probably.
So you're saying the metrics, if you were a fan, are okay.
I'm not, it's, I mean, I'm certainly not okay. I guess if I'm an Edmonton fan, because, well, I guess first of all, I'm an Edmonton fan, but the second thing is like, you don't ever want to be where they are in the standings, but I'm certainly not worried. I'm not panicking because I think the metrics are okay. And there's like I said, with Calgary, there's now a couple years of history where they continue to just, despite being really unlucky, they will stay that way. They're the team that sustains the unluckiness. Where Edmonton, I'm confident enough that they will turn around. There's I know they're top heavy, but they're deeper. They're probably deeper than they get credit for. I know they're not the deepest team in the league, but they're probably a little deeper than they get credit for. So I do think Edmonton turns the ship around, and I still think that they're a team that is. I mean, they may not win the division, they may not finish first in the division, but I think they're going to be a playoff team.
I'd be very, very surprised if Edmonton didn't make the playoffs. I guess you could just say it like that. But the thing was, what I didn't get was all the talk during the summer about the Kings goaltending. Like, was everyone just totally fine with Jack Campbell and Stuart Skinner, like up in Edmonton? They were. That was going to win Edmonton a Stanley Cup, because to be honest with you, they look, just both of them look bad right now. So
you and Holden and I too are on the same wavelength. Holden and I too comes in here saying the only thing I'd be worried about if I'm at Edmonton is their goaltending.
Yeah, and their best free agent pickup was Connor Brown, and now there's talk about waiving him so they don't have to pay him $3.5 million next year.
Russ, we talked about that with the goaltending. There's a lot of teams in the league. Look at who the Kings just beat last night in Toronto. Like, there's a lot of teams and a lot of good teams, a lot of teams that are considered cup contenders with goaltending questions. So the Kings are not the only ones in that boat. I had zero faith that Jack Campbell was going to do anything this year. I was a little bit more optimistic about Skinner. This has been a really disappointing start for him. I thought that he had a pretty good year last year. I don't know if he was a finalist in the Calder, but he was getting some votes, I think, at least. Like, he was somebody that was kind of in the conversation.
He was a finalist, I believe. I
saw that was deservedly so. And so I thought, like, there's an opportunity here for him to have a little bounce back, like a little confidence booster. He was recognized for his good rookie season, and maybe he can kind of slowly take the reins. That just hasn't happened yet. So maybe it still will. But, you know, yeah, there's questions in goal, as there are with other teams.
Well, Zach, the Kings fan, agrees with you. Said Edmonton was riding a hot Skinner into the playoffs last year. I think they were hoping Skinner just had a bad playoff run and were able to rebound. There's a lot of that going on.
Look at the two surprise teams in the Pacific right now, the Canucks and the Anaheim Ducks. I haven't looked, but I would imagine both of those teams are probably top five in goals saved above expected. Thatcher Demko is playing lights out, and Dolstal and Gibson have been playing pretty good for Anaheim, for a team that's giving up a ton of chances. Yeah. I think they won that game against Pittsburgh, which was hilarious, by the way. If you guys didn't see the end of that Pittsburgh game, they had a 5-on-3 for like – the Penguins had a 5-on-3 for like a minute 30 with like 2 minutes left in the game. And for some reason, Evgeny Malkin decided it was a good idea to start taking slap shots from the point on a 5-on-3. McTavish comes out of the box and scores shorthanded. It was just hilarious. And I believe they were outshot like 42 to like 20 or something that game. So it's weird, right? Like, we talk about goaltending, but the teams that are doing really well have the good goaltenders or getting the good goaltending. It's just, this will be the test to see like how sustainable will that be. So you mentioned, Joe, like, you're not, like, you don't pick Vancouver as your surprise team because they're like one of the bottom teams in expected goal share and all that. But they'll be a good, like, they'll be the test and the experiment in terms of, hey, if you have a good goaltender, can that save you from having the bad team in front of them? When the Kings are kind of the opposite, right, where they have that good team in front of them, but they have maybe that mediocre goaltending, although Talbot's playing out of his mind.
Yeah, I think you run into a similar problem. It's just backwards, because you get into playoffs and then you're just holding on for dear life and depending on Thatcher Demko to steal every game for you. And that runs out just as much as having a bad goalie is going to burn you in the playoffs. So it's a similar problem. It's tough to find that team that's got the total package. That's how you win.
With the 60%, which team? Look, quick answer. Which team falls out? Which team do you think is not in there comes in?
So the top three teams are Vegas, the Kings, and the Ducks?
No, Vegas, Kings, and Canucks.
Vancouver's
and Canucks. The Ducks, I believe, and
I think Seattle.
Arizona. Like no, Arizona.
Oh, Arizona's the wild card.
Well, Arizona's in the Central, but like...
But they were the wild card, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think my pick would be the Ducks. I think they're a flash in the pan. Good story. Cronin's a perfect guy for that job. I've said it time and time again. I think that team, there's a little bit of a maturity gap there, and they needed a coach that's going to come in there and be hard-headed and tell them that, hey, guys, we're not going to win games with flashy plays and all that good stuff. So he has them coaching well, and he got himself kicked out of a game. I'm sure that got the team feeling pretty good. So
great stat, right? Well, I think first – they had two players get a Gordie Howe hat trick, and that's the first time that's happened since like 1892.
Oh, the Coyotes?
Yeah. 1892. The first two players to get Gordie Howe hat trick. That's been.
It seems like our prediction, Joe, too, like with the five teams in the Pacific might be coming true. I feel like a lot of the Central teams are kind of
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, at least right now, I still feel good about that. I still feel good about it. Like, Arizona's a nice story, but as of today, I still feel good about that. And I would agree. I think if there's a team that's going to slip, I agree. It's Anaheim. I know I've got the future on them, but I don't need them. I just need them to go 500. 500 is perfect. Even a couple games under 500, and I'm going to win that over. I think they're going to comfortably – I said that they'd gain 20 points, and that's going to get them to 78, and I think that they can comfortably – approach that. Yeah, so I think they're going to be a much improved team, but still a team that's eyes toward, you know, next season. But other thing to keep in mind with them is they're really monitoring Leo Carlson, who looks like
the real deal.
They're monitoring him, and he may, depending on how his first half goes, we may see him playing like regularly in the second half of the season, which is only going to help them. But no, I think the Ducks will come back, because I think that you're going to see Edmonton move up. I guess, I don't know, maybe Calgary's just not going to do it. but no, I think Anaheim, slips a little bit. And I think eventually it's going to, Vancouver has to start actually playing a little bit better. Like, Demko's going to steal games because he's that good. But I don't think a team that is that reliant on their goalie can finish second in the division. Like maybe they can crack a wild card. Then maybe they finish fourth or fifth in the division, but I can't see them finishing where they are if they're having that poor like of expected goal share. Still early, that, and it's still noise in the data, but
that Mentukov for Anaheim too. He looks pretty good.
Listen, the Ducks got some freaking players. Yeah, they got some players. They're gonna be that Leo Carlson's gonna be a problem.
And McTavish too, yeah.
Yep.
They're gonna be a scary team in a few years. Hopefully, yep. Hopefully.
Wait, would it cut by then?
Yeah. Nick Vrohman coming in, Jersey deserves some respect. Good player. Missing him a bit, 100%. Gags and all. He was tied with Drew Doughty and expected king, Chychrun for the defenseman goals lead. That's kind of ironic there for those stats coming in. But I don't want to, you know, I don't want to pass over this real quick. Somebody was listening to you, Russ. Said, hey, Russ, great job on Locked On Kings today. Maybe you can invite Eddie to join the podcast sometime. Sure. We'd love to have Eddie come on here for a little guest spot. We want to do more guest spots, and we appreciate him having our main man, Russ, here on Locked On Kings.
Yeah,
I don't want his
wife's a big Charger fan, so
there you go.
We share the depression in that department.
I don't want to be remiss and not mention – you know, Vegas obviously leads the division. They're undefeated right now, 9-0-1. It's obviously been, there's been no slow start for them or hangover for them. They've been good. They're probably outperforming their metrics a little bit. So I suspect that they'll probably come back to earth in some fashion. They're actually a sub 50 in terms of shot attempts and in terms of expected goals. But again,
they've played really poor teams. Their schedule has been very favorable. I'm looking at it right now. They opened against the Kraken. They've played the Sharks, the Ducks, the Jets, Blackhawks twice, and they just beat the Canadiens. So yeah. I thought that game against for the Kings to kind of show that they were right there with the Golden Knights. I thought that was great. So
agreed.
You see the record and everything. The undefeated. They had just lost a shootout to Chicago the day before. That was a pretty cool to see. It's gotten to the point where I think the Kings have a chance to win every game at this point.
Yeah.
Which is all you ask for, right?
I will say, I said it on Twitter, Toronto for whatever reason just didn't have it. They didn't have any jump yesterday. Fully expect for those that are listening on this Thursday, if it comes on a Thursday, I think Ottawa's going to come out flying tonight. This is going to be a tougher matchup, I think, for the Kings than Toronto.
Or we will put them in a body bag with all the dismay going in their upper.
That's true. What a shit show that is. Oh, but that's an exciting team to watch. Ridley Greig. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Watch him. Number 71 for Ottawa. Fun player. But it should be a fun game. It'll be a fun game tomorrow. LA Ottawa is going to be a fun game.
You know what else is fun? Reading articles from Hockey Royalty. So get on hockeyroyalty.com. Read some articles there. Buy some merch. Get into the weeds with the deep analysis that we have going on here. Articles coming out every single day. You also know where the audio content is coming from at Hockey Royalty here. Follow us at hockey_royalty at RandoCommando24 at JW Paterino at NHL Russell. And hey, if you want some of that rain action, get in there with Kyle here at Kopitar 408. HOF DraftKings code THPN. Get your Raycon here with raycon.com/THPN. Get in the chat, like and subscribe. Send this to your mom, send this to your grandma, send this to anybody that's never seen hockey before, because they are in for a treat, because we are delightful. And as always on this podcast, go Kings, go.